Today is Tuesday, December 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Electors from around the United States formally voted on Monday for the highest office in the land.
I'm proud to announce that 29 votes have been cast for the Honorable Joseph Robinette Biden, Jr.
Followed by the President-elect addressing the nation.
What beats deep in the hearts of the American people is this: democracy.
Plus, how scientists keep orbital objects safe. We'll have these stories and more next. Presidential electors across the United States voted in the Electoral College on Monday.
Let the record reflect, Donald J. Trump received 29 electoral votes for President of the United States.
I'm proud to announce that 29 votes have been cast for the Honorable Joseph Robinette Biden, Jr. of Delaware for President of the United States.
They confirmed that former Vice President Joe Biden defeated President Donald Trump in last month's election for a new four-year term as the American leader. White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman is in Delaware with the president-elect, and I asked him on Monday afternoon if there were any surprises during the mostly procedural vote.
Steve, there has not been any surprises. In normal years, we really wouldn't even be talking about the Electoral College vote because it's almost always a formality. But what is happening, of course, in the context of the president saying that he did not lose the election and the many legal challenges that were filed unsuccessfully to stop the vote or have more recounts or actually overturn the results of the election. There is considerable focus today on this formalization of the vote through the Electoral College. Now, of course, the overall outcome was never in doubt. But in past years, there have been so-called faithless electors who have tried to switch their votes. We're not aware of that happening on a Monday. And the rules have been tightened up in recent years to really prevent that. So a bit more drama than usual because there's just so much attention on it. But the outcome inevitable, Joe Biden being elected the 46th president of the United States.
You mentioned drama. There's actually heightened security in several of the battleground states, Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin. What can you tell us about what was going on in those states that prompted officials to go that extra mile to provide extra security for the electors?
Well, because of the heated rhetoric around the post-election period and what law enforcement authorities say are direct threats on some of the electors, there were moves to prevent any potential incidents. In Michigan, in fact, they're saying that there were clear threats of violence there, and measures were taken to ensure that this would be carried out as safely as possible. In some states, we've seen police escorting the electors into the buildings and other places. Where exactly in state buildings, legislatures, that the electors would be gathering was kept secret.
As you mentioned, the president has not conceded the election yet. He's still saying that he's going to fight the results. What do we know about the campaign's plans moving forward now that the Electoral College is voting and that vote is planned to be certified once the new Congress is set?
Well, I don't think necessarily we'll hear anything different from the campaign that we've heard or from Donald Trump as well. What will be key, Steve, is how do Republican members of Congress respond? And do they start referring to president-elect Joe Biden. The president, in the recent 24 hours or so, has claimed that there were issues with the election which cast the results in doubt, including vote tallies in one county in Michigan that, according to the president, show massive fraud. But we've just seen when this has actually gone to judges at the state level and then attempts made, of course, to bring this before the Supreme Court, the president and his allies have been repeatedly rebuffed.
Steve Herman is VOA's White House bureau chief, and President-elect Joe Biden addressed the nation Monday evening.
What beats deep in the hearts of the American people is this: democracy, the right to be heard, to have your vote counted, to choose leaders of this nation, to govern ourselves. In America, politicians don't take power. People grant power to them. The flame of democracy was lit in this nation a long time ago. And we now know nothing, not even a pandemic or an abuse of power, can extinguish that flame.
The votes cast on Monday will be certified in Congress on January 6, 2021. U.S. President Donald Trump announced via Twitter that Attorney General William Barr will be leaving his administration. The AP's Mike Gracia has more.
Attorney General William Barr is resigning amid lingering tension with President Donald Trump over the president's claims of election fraud and the investigation of President-elect Joe Biden's son. Barr went to the White House Monday, where he submitted his letter of resignation, according to a tweet from Trump. Barr's last day will be December 23rd. Trump said Deputy Attorney General Jeff Rosen will become acting Attorney General. Trump publicly expressed anger after Barr's statement to the Associated Press this month that the Justice Department had found no widespread election fraud that would change the outcome of the election. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Daily records continue to increase for COVID-19 cases and deaths in many parts of the world, forcing governments to impose restrictions or consider lockdowns to halt the spread of the coronavirus. According to Johns Hopkins University Coronavirus Resource Center, Italy has now overtaken Britain as the European country with the most COVID-19 deaths. Overall, there are more than 16 million people in the United States who have contracted the disease, but nearly 300,000 have died. The biggest vaccination campaign in American history has now begun, with healthcare workers getting COVID-19 shots around the nation. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani takes it from here.
I'm feeling great.
Seconds later, New York critical care nurse Sandra Lindsay became one of the first to get the shot. With Governor Andrew Cuomo watching via video conference, Lindsay said she's relieved.
This is the weapon that will end the war.
In Louisville,
it starts today.
Dr. Jason Smith rolled up his sleeve and urged others to follow when the vaccine's more widely available. But there are fears many Americans don't want the shot or aren't sure. Health and Human Services Chief Alex Azar says the government will work to assure the nation that the shots are both safe and effective.
Getting vaccinated will help keep you, your family, and your country healthy and safe.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
Pressure is growing on the European Union to approve the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine after regulators in Britain, the United States, and Canada have given the green light in recent days. Henry Widgell has that part of the story.
Britain called it V-Day, or Vaccination Day, December 8th, the start of its mass coronavirus vaccination program. The rollout began in major hospitals and is now being expanded to local clinics. About 800,000 doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine are being distributed, with several million due before the end of December. Dr. Nikita Kanani is medical director for primary care in Britain's National Health Service.
Less than a year ago, we're treating the first patient with COVID, and we are now able to give a vaccine. The team has been incredible.
People over 80, the clinically vulnerable, and frontline health and nursing home staff are first in line. Doctors say by inoculating these vulnerable groups first, the pressure on hospital intensive care units will ease. So how did Britain gain the head start? British regulators insist full safety checks were carried out. June Rain is chief executive of Britain's Medicines and Healthcare Regulatory Agency.
So there should be no doubt whatever that this is a very safe and highly effective vaccine. It will help us turn the corner.
But in polls, half the British public have safety concerns over the vaccine. The World Health Organization's chief scientist, Soumya Swaminathan, says it is vital that governments communicate clearly.
And the more open and transparent we can be, the more likely it is that people will have the trust and the confidence and would not only want to take the vaccine, but would also be patient and wait for their turn.
With Britain, the United States and Canada having now approved the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, pressure is growing on the European Union to do the same. Approval is expected by the end of December. Angela Merkel is German Chancellor. She said, "We want to do this in a very coordinated fashion and show that everyone has the same kind of access. That access will not be available to billions of people around the world." Aid agencies accuse rich countries of hoarding the vaccine. Anna Marriott is Health Policy Manager for Oxfam.
9 out of 10 people in poor countries are not going to receive a vaccine next year and possibly for years to come.
Scientists say the world will not get back to normal until there is a global rollout of vaccinations. Dr. Stergios Mostios, a molecular biologist at the University of Northumbria, recently spoke to VOA.
Somewhere between 70 and 80% of the population worldwide will need now to be vaccinated.
That would require billions of doses of vaccine and is likely to take many months or years. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
There are currently more than 72.6 million confirmed cases of COVID-19, resulting in over 1.6 million deaths. Security video has shown an Australian police officer making threats towards Aboriginal boys in custody and apparently twisting the arm of one child. A Royal Commission in 2017 recommended improvements to the way Northern Territory authorities treated young Indigenous people, but justice advocates are questioning whether anything has changed. Phil Mercer has more.
Security camera footage has shown a police officer grabbing, shoving and verbally abusing a teenage Aboriginal boy in a police station in Alice Springs in the Northern Territory. The video was recorded in March 2018. The officer's language is crass and his tone is threatening towards a group of Indigenous boys aged between 12 and 16, arrested for stealing a car and leading police on a chase. He's seen apparently twisting one boy's arm around his back and pushing him into a bench. Two officers were the subject of disciplinary proceedings, but authorities in the Northern Territory have said they weren't allowed by law to divulge what action was taken, if any. June Oscar is Australia's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Social Justice Commissioner.
Disgusted with what I saw, what I heard. I'm appalled at the footage and treatment of young people by the so-called authorities.
The footage was obtained by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation under Freedom of Information laws. The Northern Territory Ombudsman, a public sector watchdog, said the officer's actions had substantially exceeded what was appropriate. The incident took place less than 6 months after the end of a Royal Commission investigation into youth justice in the Northern Territory. It was prompted by revelations of mistreatment of young people in the youth detention system. It made a number of recommendations, including mechanisms to keep Aboriginal children out of custody and boost support for their families. Campaigners believe that attitudes within law enforcement have barely changed, despite the Royal Commission's report. Aboriginal Australians make up 29% of all prisoners in custody, while Indigenous people comprise just 3% of the national population. The Northern Territory Police has said its officers were expected to achieve high standards of behaviour. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And coming up later.
Well, there are so many actors in space right now, national actors, state actors, and we're seeing more and more commercial companies that are operating satellites in space. And those people have different objectives of what they want their satellites to be doing.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Io, the third largest of Jupiter's 79 moons, is considered the most volcanically active object in the solar system. It's reported to have 400 active volcanoes that spew sulfur dioxide and monoxide. Io's thin atmosphere contains mostly sulfur dioxide. A University of California, Berkeley-led group of astronomers used the European Southern Observatory's ALMA radio telescope to find out if the atmosphere was fed the gases directly from volcanic activity or through a process that transforms frozen sulfuric material on its surface into gases once hit by direct sunlight. The astronomers found that volcanic activity directly produces 30 to 50% of Io's atmosphere. They also found the atmosphere destabilizes when Io loses direct sunlight as it's eclipsed by Jupiter and stabilizes once again once it's exposed to sunlight. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The United Nations is calling for increased support for Afghanistan in response to increasing humanitarian needs due to COVID-19, conflict, and climate change. Lisa Schlein has those details.
Jens Laerke, a spokesman for the U.N.'s Humanitarian Affairs Office, says the U.N. will need $1.3 billion to provide life-saving assistance for 16 million Afghans in the coming year.
That's double the number of people compared to 1 year ago. And that drastic increase is almost entirely due to COVID-19. However, for the time being, we only have half the money that we need to provide winter support. Winter is coming, and we need an additional $71 million for this year.
Afghanistan has suffered 40 years of brutal war that has killed millions and displaced millions more within the country and as refugees. Afghans have told UN officials they desperately hope that ongoing Afghanistan peace negotiations succeed. For peace to be credible, however, they say it must be inclusive of everyone in Afghanistan, especially women and girls. Besides the ravages inflicted by this war, Laerke says people in Afghanistan also have to contend with a worsening climate crisis and other natural disasters. He says life for most Afghans has been a matter of survival over the past four decades.
Their situation now has been further battered by the impact of the COVID-19 crisis. Household income and savings have disappeared and needs have increased dramatically. Almost half of children under five are now facing acute malnutrition and require treatment to save their lives.
Laerke says food and health care are primary needs. He notes aid agencies are staying and delivering relief to those in need, despite the many risks to their safety. So far this year, he says aid workers have provided humanitarian assistance to nearly 8 million people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The U.S. Embassy in Khartoum says President Donald Trump's administration has removed Sudan from the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism. Delisting Sudan is a move that could help the African country get international loans to revive its battered economy. The Somali government announced cutting diplomatic ties with neighboring Kenya, citing constant violations of Somalia's sovereignty. Speaking to VOA Somali Service, the information minister said the decision has been taken in response to recent political violations. Kenya did not immediately respond to the announcement. Despite calls from exiled Uyghurs, International Criminal Court prosecutors said they will not investigate China for alleged genocide and crimes against humanity. The Uyghurs had called for the investigation and provided the Hague-based court evidence in July that they say supports claims of Chinese abuse of the ethnic minority. The United States imposed long-anticipated sanctions on Turkey on Monday over Ankara's acquisition of Russian S-400 air defense systems, further complicating already strained ties between the two NATO allies. Turkey condemned the sanctions as a grave mistake. The world immediately beyond Earth's atmosphere is far from lonely, silent, or boring. There are literally thousands of artificial satellites receiving and processing information and sending it back to Earth. Knowing just where the satellites are and what they're doing is becoming increasingly relevant to our national security experts and to ordinary citizens every time they get online. Now, to find out more about satellite security and what it means for Earthlings, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with McKenna Young, a research associate at the Aerospace Security Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. She began by explaining the ramped-up importance of their work.
Well, there are so many actors in space right now, national actors, state actors, and we're seeing more and more commercial companies that are operating satellites in space. And those people have different objectives of what they want their satellites to be doing.
How many satellites are there right now in space, and what are the potential dangers?
There are about 6,000 satellites circling Earth right now. So something that's really important is making sure that these satellites don't run into each other and that they're all staying on their own track and aren't harming any other satellites.
How are they monitored?
The United States has a really large effort that we call space situational awareness. It's a bunch of different sensors and telescopes, operators and data that puts together a pretty full picture of what all's up there in space and how it's moving.
That's pretty elegant.
Not perfect. Not everyone shares all of their data. Not everyone wants everyone else to know where their satellite is. But there's a pretty large network, and we're trying to get a full picture of it.
Tell me more about the physical dangers to satellites.
So something really important is space debris. Something as small as a fleck of paint that comes off of your satellite can actually really harm another object if it hits it in space, and all satellites can be in danger.
How could damaged satellites affect us here on Earth?
Just using the internet is something that a lot of the world relies on satellites for. And it's becoming really, really important and ingrained in a lot of global society. You know, one of the biggest things is navigation or GPS that affects global militaries, citizens, and could really have a disastrous effect if a satellite was taken down that's supplying this navigation on Earth.
Of course, modern agriculture depends a lot on satellites.
Absolutely. So a lot of farmers rely on satellite data to show them what the weather is going to be, what the crops were like last year, and how they can adapt and make their crops a little bit better. So space really affects almost everyone down on Earth, even if you might not realize it.
Keeping track of satellites and their positions and directions is also a military security issue, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a lot of different ways to affect a satellite, from something physical that is shot up and destroys a satellite. It can be electronic, damaging some components of the space system or jamming the signals that are sent back to Earth from space, or even cyber attacks, hacking in to the networks and really messing with the data that the satellites are giving back to Earth. And that's definitely happening more and more with the more satellites and the more actors that are in space.
On one level, all this is just talking about traffic control challenges. But this isn't highway or even air traffic control we're talking about. What makes space different as a domain?
That's a great question. Something that makes space unique is that the objects can be a lot smaller. Something that we're seeing more are very, very small satellites. It can get pretty difficult trying to monitor exactly where they're going, what they're up to. Did they mean to make this change of direction? Are they doing it for a good reason, or should we be concerned about this shift? Those are some of the challenges.
What are you working on right now at your office?
Our team is working on a report right now assessing what different countries are doing to protect their satellites in space from some of these threats that I was talking about, making sure that the frequencies they're using are protected. There's a lot that people can do on Earth to protect the satellite and make it harder to interrupt from a laser or something in space. There can be lasers that are on satellites in space that can be shot at other satellites and disrupt a camera or a frequency that they're communicating with back on Earth. And they can blind satellites that are orbiting and stop their functionality for a little bit. So there are a lot of ways to interfere with satellite operations. And we try to, you know, really get into some big questions about these threats in space and how the space domain is evolving and how it can be safe.
McKenna Young is a research associate at the Aerospace Security Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. She spoke with my colleague Adam Phillips. The number of people age 65 and older is growing faster around the world than any other group, according to the United Nations. Elizabeth Lee reports that virtual reality is now being used to help caregivers develop more understanding and empathy.
Emma,
who is that?
Imagine having Alzheimer's disease or having a hard time seeing and hearing. These age-related health challenges can now be experienced through virtual reality or VR.
It's part of our own future of aging. So if we can see ourselves in older people that might have these slight changes, just a matter of patience and knowledge could help reduce the stress and stigma of that disease.
Carrie Shaw founded Embodied Labs, a company that immerses a user into the world of the elderly to better understand their reality. The experiences include hearing the confusion related to memory loss from Alzheimer's.
What was I looking for?
To visual impairment. Shaw's mother suffered from Alzheimer's disease. She realized even professional caregivers found it challenging interacting with her mother.
Some would treat her like a child, and she would sense that, and you know, she would kind of push back and say, I don't want to be talked down to like I'm a child.
The company offers the software and hardware needed for the VR experience to help users develop empathy.
Today we use a live-action film that's also blended into a game engine so it becomes interactive.
Jamie Hannons uses Embodied Labs to train nursing students. She says this VR experience with macular degeneration opened her eyes.
When you're in the headset, looking kind of to the side to view what's going on, I saw that tilt and I thought, I've seen that with patients so many times, and not recognized it as an opportunity to say, how's your vision?
For now, Embodied Labs only sells to services for the aging because Shaw says it's important that VR is paired with a guided discussion and reflection.
I am your brain.
To process what the users experienced so they know how to put into action what they've learned. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
I know all this may sound scary, but we're with you every step of the way.
You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay up to date with world news and events 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well. Be safe and have a terrific Tuesday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Chinese Communist Party continues on its mission to crush democracy advocates in Hong Kong, who have been bravely contesting the CCP's effort to turn Hong Kong into a dictatorship run from Beijing. In one of the latest blows orchestrated by the Chinese government, a court sentenced three young leaders of Hong Kong's democracy movement to prison. Joshua Wong, at 24 years old, is already a veteran advocate for political and human rights in Hong Kong. He was a student leader of the 2014 Umbrella Revolution and is among the founders of the now disbanded political party Democisto. On December 2nd, Mr. Wong was sentenced to 13 and a half months in prison for his involvement in a 2019 protest outside of police headquarters. Two other prominent members of the party, Agnes Chow and Yvonne Lam, were also sentenced, Ms. Chow to 10 months and Mr. Lam to 7. The three leaders are among the 10,000 demonstrators that have been arrested in Hong Kong since June 2019. The arrests, which include that of media mogul and pro-democracy activist Jimmy Lai, occurred as the Chinese government continues to choke off Hong Kong's autonomy and deprive its citizens of fundamental freedoms in flagrant violation of China's international commitments. The United States is appalled by the Hong Kong government's political persecution of Hong Kong's pro-democracy advocates, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo wrote in a statement. The use of courts to silence peaceful dissent is a hallmark of authoritarian regimes and underscores once again that the Chinese Communist Party's greatest fear is the free speech and free thinking of its own people. Hong Kong, Mr. Pompeo said, historically benefited from a free and open system that celebrated the peaceful advocacy of citizens like Joshua Wong, Agnes Chow, Yvonne Lam, and Jimmy Lai. Hong Kong's people should be free to exercise the rights guaranteed to them under the Basic Law, the Sino-British Joint Declaration, a UN-registered treaty, and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The United States, Secretary Pompeo declared, will continue to work with our allies and partners around the world to champion the rights and freedoms of the people of Hong Kong and all those who suffer under the Chinese Communist Party's repressive rule. We stand with Joshua Wong, Agnes Chow, Yvonne Lam, Jimmy Lai, the people of Hong Kong, and all the people of China.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.